Hi, good afternoon. My name is Frank Holt, officially Francis X. Holt, and I'm going to be sharing with you some of the success that we've had in a couple of places developing care bundles for reducing behavioral restraints. I have, as my predecessors, no disclosures. I wish I had some, to tell you the truth. But I can't get anybody particularly interested in this. So why am I telling you about this? I've been a psychiatric nurse for 36 years. I retired this year, and I'm sort of semi-retired. I'm teaching a little and consulting a little. But I went to school at Bellevue Hospital School of Nursing in New York City. We did a lot of psychiatry there. And in the 70s, we did a lot of restraints there. The unit that we're going to be talking about here is an 18-bed acute adult psychiatric unit. It's a locked unit. For folks to be in the hospital now, as you know, for psychiatric reasons, it's almost a de facto intensive psychiatric unit. And this particular unit exceeded state norms. In Massachusetts, you have to report to the state on these four measures: events per 1,000 days, patients restrained per 1,000 days, average hours per event, total hours per 1,000 patient days. And the per 1,000 patient day qualifier sort of adjusts for differences in unit size and census size and seasonality and things like that. So why a care bundle? If there are other nurses in the house that probably heard the term care bundle before, and it's usually applied to things like acute MI and ventilator-acquired pneumonia and that sort of thing. We did a literature search in Medline, a few other places, and found no care bundles had been developed for psychiatry. The idea behind a care bundle is that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And you take four or five evidence-based practices, bring them together in a bundle, implement them as a bundle, report on them as a bundle, and you get, theoretically, you get good outcomes. Wow. Responding to thoughts. So the evidence-based practices in this particular care bundle were the use of data to inform practice, use of an individual safety tool, which we're going to talk more about. It's an individual crisis prevention plan, trauma-informed care, sensory-based treatment, and enhanced patient engagement. In addition to using evidence-based practices for the content pieces of this, we also decided to use an evidence-based practice for the process of improving the quality of the care. And this is a cycle that a lot of you might be familiar with, the PDSA cycle: plan, do, study, and act. And this started in September of 2013. We were doing a mock survey, getting ready for a joint commission visit, which we survived very nicely. But we found that what we found on the earlier slide, that our performance compared to the rest of the state was fairly poor in restraint incidents. And we did a safety tool audit. Now, a safety tool is something that's built with the patient when they come in or as soon as possible afterwards. And it identifies people's escalating influences and their calming influences. It's sort of an individual crisis prevention plan. And ideally, the staff would look at patients and say, you know, I see your pacing. Can we talk about that? Would you like to do something with regard to your safety tool and your safety plan? When we did a safety tool audit, we found that fewer than half of the patients had, on the night that we did it, had a safety tool in their chart. And so we decided to go with the safety tool as our first data collection point. In-house data collection, which is very important in addition to the state mandated data collection. And also we decided to go with mechanical restraints, which some of you might remember as four-point locked leathers. And they're the most traumatic kind of restraints. There's lots of evidence on that, as opposed to chemical restraints and physical restraints. The patient being restrained is traumatized. The staff doing the restraining is traumatized. And it puts a dampening effect on the other patients in the unit as well, who start to view the staff as controlling at best and dangerous at worst. And oftentimes after a restraint, they don't want to come out of their rooms. So what we did was we went back 6 months and took a look at the number of restraints. There were 29 restraints, mechanical restraints, and 26 of them did not have crisis prevention plans. So, you know, the N is pretty small for generalization and statistical significance. Definitely have an N to power problem, but we have a great visual to bring to the staff and say, gee, take a look at this. You know, at the very least, they appear to be related. And this kind of thing went back to the staff in the way of being posted on the wall, and all I have to do is wave at this and it changes. Maybe it's my magnetic personality. It's starting to scare me a little bit. Yeah, it's going on by itself. We will be out on time.
Yeah. No question. I don't have to do my
job. I don't know what this is. So we took that in the Cambridge Health Alliance, which is three hospitals and 20-some-odd clinics. Every spring they have an academic poster session, and we had an opportunity to demonstrate to them that we were doing something positive in psychiatry. It's been my experience over the last three, four decades that in community hospitals, psychiatric units get buried. Sometimes they're not even on the directory when you walk into the hospital. And when you ask the information lady, she whispers to you where it is. No, that shouldn't have happened. So this takes a version of the chart you just looked at, our plan, a clip of the state regulations for safety plans, and up in the upper right hand corner there's individual safety plan safety tool binders. We just created little binders for each of the treatment teams. There were 2 9 patient treatment teams. This is a physical, visual, it had to be taken to somebody had to take it to the treatment team. You opened it up. If you had 8 patients, you needed 8 treatment, 8 safety plans in there. And if you didn't, somebody had to do something about that. This was a very simple kind of a fix, and it had profound consequences. And we were also able to show between October and December, we went from 47% to 100% compliance on the safety plan. And to my knowledge, I know they kept that 100% rate for another 14 months at the very least. Now, it's kind of easy to get involved in the numbers. You brought me back to my days at Brandeis with all of the chi-squares, and I am trained as a researcher. But one of the things I always told us at Brandeis was that the time between research and implementation was 17 years, and that's a little scary. So it's really helpful to develop your own sort of facility-based and unit-based kinds of data and reporting. This one I'd never done before. I'd never heard of it before. But we decided we needed to do it, the patient time map. And the way this came about, again, you can become sort of intellectually smug saying, look, I report 4 different sets of data to the state every month, and then we've got our own data on individual safety plans, and aren't we good? But this has a mind of its own. I besides having an inpatient psych unit, I also had psych emergency room, a behavioral health call center, and an outpatient clinic. So I would often be leaving the inpatient psych unit. One day I'm leaving, I look at the day room, and I see 9 or 10 patients looking at cartoons. And I don't think a lot about that. I think, well, somebody's late. And I get on the elevator, and I go, and I come back 2 hours later, and I go past the day room, and guess what I see? 9 or 10 patients looking at cartoons. And I ask the charge nurse, who's a good nurse, good patient-centered nurse, what's going on in there? And he said to me, oh, that's Warner Brothers Group. And I said, excuse me, what? And this was a good nurse, but this practice had been going on for so long, it became a really good example of normalizing deviance. And so we did this patient time map. What happened was the treatment teams were meeting at the same time every morning, and nobody was with the patients. These were not ignorant or malicious people. These were well-intended people, but this is how people deal with varying pressures, and it gets institutionalized. We did the map, put the map up on the wall, and said, you know, maybe you're having a lot of problems with patient behavior because they have 3 hours and 20 minutes free every day between breakfast and lunch, and on a psych unit, idle time is the devil's workshop. So, we got people together, and we came up with something that gave them 40 minutes of free time. It also integrated building your safety tool and using sensory resources into the plan. And engaging patients in treatment is well documented as a way of avoiding problems. This is the virtuous cycle. You spend more time interacting with patients on a personal level, and you reduce events, adverse events, and then when you reduce adverse events, you have more time to interact with people. So, outcomes. This one is the most stunning visually, I think. We took four groups, the morning meeting, the afternoon meeting, the safety tool group, and the open OT studio, and really worked at getting people sort of herded into group. People would go out and invite people individually to come. Over the period of 5 months here, the attendance went up 62%, and the last one on the right is the restraints, which plummeted. Pretty stunning kinds of results, and we didn't spend a lot of money on this, and not only that, but when you have people in restraints, you have one-to-one sitter cost went down 60%. Our patient complaints went down 36%. We continued the plan, do, study, act cycle, and as you can see, by the time we got to step five, the boxes at each step are richer and involve more of the complexity that's going on here as we integrate all the evidence-based practices. When you save 60% on a cost center, you get invited to the board to tell them what you're doing. We listened to the board. They had some really good input about safety tools. And realistically, this is a good political move because it increases the likelihood that the board is going to support your next steps. We continue the PDSA cycle, this whole shared structure. You know, nursing and direct care can get to be very task-oriented, and you forget why you're doing what you're doing. And so this shared structure for change kind of brought more people into it and made it kind of clearer. We started collecting and analyzing sensory data at the sensory cost. Those are two of our sensory stalwarts, and they did great work educating patients and staff about weighted blankets and tower balls and cush balls and all the other things that would bring people back out of their heads a little bit. Expanding sensory-based treatment include aromatherapy, and we did send some folks out for that. And then after we got to the point where restraint was unusual. We posted how many days without a restraint and changed the number every day. What's going on with the people who are still being restrained? And that's another area of inquiry. And then involving the physicians in the emergency department and on the unit in assessing and developing medication protocols. Once you've got a successful program, it's easier to get physicians involved, and that's not because they're front runners, but because they're very busy. And they don't want to be wasting time on unproven kinds of things. But if you've got something that works, they'll be your best allies. So here in one slide is the business case. You decrease sick time, turnover, staff replacement, sitter cost, patient injury, workers' comp claims, litigation, and the time spent in root cause analysis and other risk mitigation stuff. You increase patient engagement and safety. Our likelihood to recommend score on patient experience of care questionnaire went from the 60th percentile to the 87th percentile in 5 months. You increase staff morale. And then the final last step is basically, next step is what I'm doing here today, which is kind of spreading the word. This didn't cost a lot. I'm teaching a psychopathology course right now, and we're talking about Philippe Pinel around the French Revolution, and his big thing was, treat people like nicely. Treat them like they're human beings. And that's basically what we're doing here. When we're talking with people whose presentation's a little scary, they're saying, gee, what's going on? How can we help you? And so I'm trying to get the word out, and thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Yeah, that, actually, the slide with the two people in the cart, on top of the cart is the data collection sheet, and that was the next step. And it was, who's using what, when, what time of day, what day of the week, who's on duty, by treating physician, by diagnosis. And that's going now. And that, I think, will probably help us with teasing out what's going on with the people still being restrained. Thank you.
I think you've addressed it in that last lecture showing the impact on things like staff morale. I'm always curious about one of the things we typically don't look at. We tend to assume that the interventions we apply are uniform. Once you have an intervention, it's uniformly applied. And yet we know that individuals do this different, have a different impact just by their very presence
mm-hmm.
to patients and response. And I'm just curious about if you've looked at or thought about that. Did you know that some people were less effective?
Well, I think intuitively you have some sense of that, but one of the beauties of this is that we got everybody into the room and said, look, this is working. I did have a nurse who had been working in one place for a long, long time, and she was, some of the younger people coming out and saying, you know, she doesn't get out from behind the desk, and that's a problem. And I sat down with her, and it turned out she was scared. And so when you show people you're building a safer workplace as well as a more therapeutic environment, you're more likely to get buy-in. And in her case, we did a few things, but she expected me to blast her, and that's not the way we do business. So it was good.